Make sure that you're always accelerating the flow of value to customers. You need to always be thinking, what can I be doing to get content out the door faster and to make sure that I have a consistent and constant stream of content going between myself and my customer, because you don't want people sitting around waiting. And you've got to keep people engaged, because if your audience isn't finding engagement on your channels, they're going to go find it somewhere else.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are and wherever you're watching from. I'm Matt Pierce, host of the Visual Lounge, of course, and today we're going to be talking about something I think we sometimes neglect. We think about the end product of video, we think about the process for video. How do we get faster? How do we deliver faster? How do we accelerate the process so that we actually have the opportunity to get things out that can make a difference, whether you're doing customer education, you're a creator, whether you're doing internal kind of training, learning, development, whatever it might be. Speed is important, although there's a whole bunch of other things I'm sure we've got to consider that. So my guest today is going to help us talk about that. So let's go ahead and introduce Brandon. Brandon Burtner has been obsessed with learning his entire life and has been involved with it professionally for over a decade. He began his career as an internal learning and development facilitator. He soon realized he could utilize video production degree from Eastern Kentucky University to create multimedia learning content and multiply his impact. This shift brought him into instructional design and eventually the totally different and not the same field of learning experience design. Learning experience design is where Brandon found an important career opportunity to move from internal L&D to customer education. It's also where Brandon found his passion for program management and data analytics, leading to a shift into leadership. Today, Brandon is the Senior Director of Learning Strategies and Solutions for Scaled Agile. His team is responsible for enabling the learning solution or organization as they build scalable and modern learning experiences to empower agile enterprises around the globe. And we are so excited to have him here with us today. So please help me welcome Brandon to the Visual Lounge.
Hey, thanks so much, Matt. It's really good to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're here. And, you know, Brandon, we're going to jump in because, you know, time is always short. We got lots to talk about. So the first thing we like to ask our guests is always, what's a tip? You're a video guy. You kind of came out of this like with a degree. Not many of my guests have that, actually. A lot of us stumble into it. So I'm curious, what's a tip you would give to my audience about using video in the work?
Yeah, I have, I like to fancy myself a boring guy, and I have a boring tip, but I believe in boring tips. I actually, my number one tip for anyone that's working on video is to really be thoughtful about your file management. So this can get away from you. You make your first video, your second video, your third video, and like at first it might not super matter. You've just got like a folder on your desktop and you're managing all of your assets in one place. But eventually you're collaborating with stakeholders that are like maybe not co-located with you. Maybe eventually you're on a bigger team and you are like trying to share assets across your organization or multiple organizations, like bringing in contractors, et cetera. And it's really important that you have like a thought out file management strategy that includes like having your assets available on the cloud in a way that like makes itself conducive to collaboration. And then also just like when we're thinking about like, again, those boring things like file naming conventions, folder structures, et cetera, you can really quickly go from, again, like one or two videos with just a handful of assets to just like something that's completely unscalable and unwieldy. It happens really quickly. It sneaks up on people. So that's always kind of like the very first thing that I recommend. The best time to do this is yesterday. The next best time to do it is today. Because you're looking today at your file structure and saying, but like we're too far gone. 2 years from now, you're going to be a lot farther gone than you are today.
I love that. So I've got to ask you, when's the last time you named a video that you produced, __final__final_?
See, the last time that I did that, maybe 5 years ago.
Good.
Certainly used to, but it's something that I've gotten a lot better at.
That's awesome. What a great advice too, because it is one of the things when it grows, right? And you don't want to lose those files, and it's never more embarrassing than when you can't find something and because you can't recreate it a lot of times, right? So
Yeah. And you're looking for these things years later. And there's also just like, again, the time involved. We're going to be talking about like time management and getting things out the door quickly. It's really frustrating when something that should take 5 seconds takes 5 minutes or even 50 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's dive into our topic, because accelerating flow is like a title. It's like, what is that? And you shared some things with me I think are really interesting. So give us a high level, like, because of your background, you've obviously done a lot of things in video, you work with a lot of teams, but what is it, like, high level, what does it mean to accelerate flow in a context of video?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you mentioned, I work for Scaled Agile, and we created and maintain and then train on the Scaled Agile framework, which is a way of working, a framework for getting work done. And like one of the major tenets is accelerating the flow of value to our customers. So we have this value stream, which is getting, whether it's software, whether it's video, whether it's marketing materials, like getting things from the heads of the idea makers to your customers as quickly as possible, and having this constant stream of value. So from a video production standpoint, because I manage different multimedia creators here at Scaled Agile, that means, again, being able to quickly get video out the door and have that constant stream of like new content available for our learners, our customers, et cetera, all the time and as quickly as possible.
Well, I love that, because I mean, I talk to hundreds, if not thousands of people every year about video creation. And I often hear one of the drawbacks or concerns about video is time it takes, right? Like there's some things like, naturally, we're kind of taught to read and write, and people can write usually pretty quickly. But video, it feels like it, you know, it's an investment. It takes time. So where do we start in this? Because I want to get faster. I think my audience wants to get faster. Help us out here. What's the first thing you would recommend or that we should do?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, in the Scaled Agile framework, there are 8 what they call flow accelerators. I'm not going to get into all 8, but there are several that I focus on with my teams when we're talking about accelerating flow. And the very first is actually the first flow accelerator, and that's visualizing and limiting work in progress. So this is something that I see a lot, is this like channel switching of this video is one of 10 things on my plate today, or even like one of 10 videos that I'm supposed to be working on this week. Something that's really, really important for any individual contributor that's creating video content is not only limiting your work in progress, but visualizing it so that you're able to share it with like both your stakeholders and your people leaders. It's really, really important to be able to effectively communicate in a really transparent way. This is currently what's on my plate, and also like currently my capacity. So if I have the capacity to create however you want to measure it, how many minutes of video you can create per week, what number of videos you can create per week, however you want to measure and explain that capacity, you've got to be able to show, this is what's currently being asked of me, this is the priority of those items, and this is what my actual capacity is based on how many meetings I've got on the calendar, do I have vacation time on the calendar, et cetera, et cetera. The most effective, like the people that are the most effective at this never even have to explain themselves, never even have to say like, hey, I'm sorry, I've got one too many things, or you need to tell me which of these is more important. Because when you do this really effectively, you have this visualized and shared in a way where if I'm your people leader, if I'm one of your stakeholders, before I even go and ask, I know I'm going to go and check, what's Oscar's capacity today? Mm-hmm. What does he actually have? Like, what's he got on his plate? And like, how does that stack up in terms of like how much he's actually going to be able to do this week? Because just like way too often, we end up, one, not knowing how to measure that. And then we're taking on too much because we don't know how much is too much. Or two, we know how to measure it, but we don't know how to communicate it. When we're asked to do something, we get into this like, yes robot routine where we're just like, whatever I'm asked to do, I need to say yes because that's what I think is going to get me ahead. And I'll tell you right here, that's not what's going to get you ahead. What I respect as a people leader and a stakeholder is not a yes man. It's somebody that can tell me, this is what I'm capable of doing and what I'm doing right now.
So I love this, and it's, you know, we'll try not to get into my therapy of as we work through this, because we use Agile in our development, and I work with our video team and things like that. And recently, you know, we do have a point system for capacity, right? Like it's, yeah. And it's based on the Fibonacci sequence. So the points are kind of yep. made up. It doesn't really matter, but you have general ideas of how long like a point is versus 2 point versus three versus five, you know, and so forth. And it's interesting that as a leader myself, struggling to do what you just said is understanding. Now, I know the points, there's capacity, people are looking at that, but then me going in and understanding that is a different part of the game, right? And so, but I found that's that overlapping equalness of they've got to be able to articulate that, and I've got to be able to see it easily. And, you know, I could go literally in on like, you know, we use Asana, but going in on the board and see every point, but that's not helping me be a good advocate. So I love that advice, because I think it is really important. And then the idea of WIP or work in progress, you know, limiting that is such, that's great advice. And I think it's easy to forget, because it's like, well, let's do 10 things because we can't, right?
Yeah. Or even like, it's even easier to just not know how many things we're doing. One way that I found this to be effective is like managing a Kanban board, where you can say, here is each state of work that I'm doing. This is especially helpful when what you're mostly working on is video. Here is what I've currently got in pre-production. Here's what I've got in production. Here's what I've got in post. And knowing like in any given state, I can only have, whether it's one item, two items. Again, this is going to depend on the person and the team, but you can really quickly say like, oh, if you're trying to bring something into this bucket and that bucket's full, then I can tell you right now, we're either not bringing it in or something has to come out of that bucket while this one's there. So yeah, no matter what it is, whether it's using story points, t-shirt sizing, Kanban, having some method that you can easily communicate, this is how much is too much, in like that honest, transparent way where people aren't saying like, yeah, but okay, you've told me it's too much, but can't we just do one more?
Right. So can I want to get onto the other points, because I think those are going to be equally yeah. valuable, but this is a topic I've been thinking a lot about. I think for my audience, and there's probably a lot of people not doing agile development. I could imagine, like you talked about like a Kanban board, which is basically a project management board for those that don't know, and you're moving cards. If you got a limit of one, I can only do one thing. Only one thing can be worked on at a time. And then if you're not going to be working on it, you move it out. Maybe the next thing comes in, right? Like put it into a stasis point where maybe it's waiting for somebody else to do something. But yep. I imagine when I think about like, especially internal teams or these other teams I've talked to, that they sometimes will think, well, that's just a lot of busy work. I don't want to manage that. So, which is it's a real concern, right? Because you can, there's so many things you could be doing. And sure. If I'm not doing the video work, maybe I'm doing this project management work. So I guess what would your quick answer to say to like, yeah, this is actually worth it versus like, is it busy work?
Yeah. I'll say two things. One, it is busy work when you are spending more time managing a project or as much time managing a project as doing the work itself. So this is something that I'll from time to time have to have conversations or coach my team on, is just if something is so small that it would take less time to do it than it would to document it, then just do it. Right. Like that's also an agile principle, is like not overdoing it on documentation. And anything that is like kind of like bigger than that, like than that pea-sized story is, it's absolutely like worth the work, because one, you'll be really quickly surprised at like how little work it actually is. It might take a little bit of time your first few weeks as you get used to whatever system you're using, like getting like governance and rules of engagement set up with your team. But once you have it, you'll realize that this is like work that you're already doing, maybe just in like a much less transparent way of like set, like, compartmentalizing for yourself. this work is currently in progress. This work is currently like not in progress. Just like dragging a card from one state to another when you're ready to get started on something is not like some amount of work that's going to like prevent you from getting from getting meaningful work done on your videos and other projects.
Yeah. Well, thank you for entertaining me with that. I love that answer.
Yeah.
So okay, we got flow to visualize and limit the work in progress. What's next in these principles?
Yeah. So next up, I really like to go down to principle three, which is minimizing handoffs and dependencies. To me means two things. One, making sure that you have like the right people assigned to upright expectations set with those people ahead of time. And two, making sure that you have like a shared idea of a timeline and deadlines with that team. So this can mean, for example, who is my subject matter expert or quality assurance person that's going to be going over my script and storyboard? I like to make sure that like one, that person actually knows that I've asked them or assigned them to do that ahead of time. I know that that might seem completely obvious, but especially for anyone like that's maybe newer to this in your audience, and this is like they're really getting started in their video career, or if we're being completely honest, like maybe even some folks that have been doing it for a while, this gets missed. People find out, oh, you've been voluntold to be the subject matter expert that's going to be reviewing this video. You need to make sure that you're setting expectations with those stakeholders so that they understand what it is that they're getting, when they're getting it, and when you expect to get it back. So you can't just say, I'm going to give you a script on Monday. Preferably, I'm going to give you a script Monday morning. Would it be possible to have that script back by Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time? And like, get a thumbs up. Get a, yes, I have time for that. Not just you setting the expectation and then expecting that they're going to be able to follow it. So making sure that they understand that. Also making sure that they understand where this fits into the process and where we're not going to be revisiting things. So I'll share with my stakeholders, especially stakeholders who I know are going to like really want to be involved later in the process or really feel like a sense of ownership over the content. I'll make sure they understand when you sign off on a storyboard, these are the things that means you're signing off on. And these are the decisions that we're no longer going to be revisiting. I can't tell you how many times we've had subject matter experts that have said this storyboard works. And then once you actually shoot, edit, get them a first draft, they say, no, actually, I don't like the way that works with either having that person on screen or I've actually decided that even though I'd signed off on the script, there are things that I want reshot because now I don't like the script now that I hear it. I'll make sure that my stakeholders understand once you've signed off on this piece, it's been signed off and we're past that. The feedback that I'm asking for at this part in the process is this, but here is where like this other type of feedback is no longer going to be relevant or accepted. So making sure that your stakeholders understand those handoffs, the timelines, and like what we are and aren't revisiting at different parts in the process is incredibly important to make sure that we're not spinning our wheels and just reshooting things that like don't necessarily need to be reshot.
So let me ask you about that a little bit, because I see that, and I've definitely worked with SMEs and people like that, and they want to come back and change things or whatever. I think a lot of people have. So from that process, though, how much of that do you have kind of templatized out? Like do you have a document or an outline or something? You're like, hey, we kind of live off of this as our standard. Occasionally, you may make exceptions depending on the project or whatever. But is that something you have? Like it's kind of like boilerplate, here you go, makes it easy? Or is that something you're kind of recreating, rewriting, or rethinking based on the project?
Yeah, so this something that I really like to do is to have this built into whatever like project management platform you're using. And this goes back to that importance of having and using a project management platform. But whether that's Asana, Jira, like whatever it is that you're using to manage this whole process, you can templatize a task or a subtask that like the subtask is like sign off on storyboard. And this is just like a templatized subtask that gets copied and cloned each time that a new project is created. And right there in the description of that task, you have, this is specifically what it means to approve a storyboard. These are the pieces in the process that like after this step, we no longer revisit. Are there going to be things that people sign off on and that we've said we're not revisiting that topic that we have to reshoot because, oh, like whether it's the subject matter expert missed it or like something is materially changed since that sign off? Of course, that's going to happen from time to time. But we can really cut down on its occurrences when we have these working agreements because, again, it gives us like a lot more. One, it makes the subject matter expert or any of our stakeholders less likely to come back because they can see that agreement. And two, it does give us more authority to push back and say, like, prove the value of reshooting this. You've mm-hmm. already signed off on this. So before I'm going to agree to reshoot this, I need to see a compelling reason that we really need to do that. And again, sometimes the output is going to be, they have a compelling reason and we're going to have to reshoot it. But sometimes they will come back and say, okay, if that's what we've agreed on, then that's what we've agreed on and we can move forward.
Yeah. Well, I love that, right? Because it's never closed. Because if something really changes it's and fundamentally different or materially different, you got to make changes. But so I love that. And I love that it what it does is help make sure that you're getting from that through that process without the eventual hiccup. Because I think anyone that's made videos for in our organization knows that like that stakeholder comes in and you're like almost done. And they're like, we're going to change that. And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't. You know how much work that will be. It's worse now to change it than it was any point before this. So, well, let's get at least one more thing. What's one more thing we can do to accelerate this flow? Because I love where we're at, you know, and it's interesting. I'm hoping the audience that's listening to this realizes so far, and maybe the third one will be, maybe it won't be. We've not talked about like setting up cameras faster or doing all the like the actual video work. This is all that prep work. And I can't emphasize enough. For my audience, that's where the keys are. So what's the third thing for us, Brandon? How do we accelerate?
Yeah, I'll say when you say like, just set the camera up faster, just, I mean, making sure that you're optimizing all your processes is definitely part of it. But I'm also always loathe to say, the secret to like getting things done faster is just like to work faster. we're always going to learn and grow and get better and more quicker and also just like have more optimized practices as we get better at the actual production, the actual pre-production. But I don't know that that's a quick tip. My last tip that I'll share that I really again hone in on with my team is the flow accelerator number 7, optimizing time in the zone. This is another one that feels obvious, but then if it's so obvious, why do I see it missed on our calendar so often? Optimizing time in the zone is all about saying, if my like number one priority this week is this video, I need to have chunks of time on my calendar, large chunks of time on my calendar, where I can work on this and nothing else. This means a lot of different things to different people in different organizations. This can mean something as simple as actually like creating do not book or do not block times on your calendar where you say, for this 2, 3, or even 4 hour block of time, I'm not going to be accepting meetings on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because I need that time uninterrupted and unimpeded to work on this video. I think that this is intuitive and that most people know it, but I'm going to say it anyways. 8 30-minute chunks of time is not the same thing as 1 4-hour chunk of time. Having different 30-minute or 1-hour chunks of time in between meetings to work on something is much less effective and much less quick than just saying, this 2 hours, this 3 hours, I'm dedicated to this thing without switching to switching my brain to different ideas. A lot of times this might mean putting yourself away on Slack, turning it off, getting your email off your screen so that, again, while you're working on this one thing, your head's down, you're focused, and you're not constantly going, oh, somebody asked me for something. Oh, somebody asked me for something. Because again, when you're working that way, you are not getting anywhere near the speed and efficiency that you would if you were just heads down on that one thing. So optimizing time and flow, or optimizing time in the zone, this is something that you might need to ask your people leader about. Hey, I've got too many meetings on my calendar, or meetings that are breaking my day up too badly. What can I do about that? That is something that I love when my people come and ask me about, because I can say, let's look at it together, or make sure that that person understands we've got law of 2 feet here. That means that if this meeting is not the best use of your time, take your 2 feet and walk right out. You don't have to be somewhere just because it's put on your calendar. So optimizing time in the zone, incredibly important. I think it's kind of an obvious tip, but again, what percentage of people do I see doing a great job at it? Less than I'd like.
Oh, well, absolutely. We like to say like something like context switching is a killer, right? Because
yeah,
I'm someone who's in a lot of meetings, and I'm trying to switch from like this topic to this topic, this topic to this person and their needs, you know. And it is hard, especially because I think video work, and you know, tell me if you agree, Brandon, is that video work is really, it's a cerebral practice, right? Like you've got to think, you've got to envision and imagine, and you got to do, you know, you're doing this and stepping away from it, I lose that thought. And I often have to go back several steps to be like, okay, where was I?
It's engaging. And even thinking of like, you're working in Camtasia, you've got your timeline on the bottom, and how quickly, like, as you're adding more and more and more elements to that timeline, how quickly those video and audio elements leave your head and you've got to go back and go, wait a second, what is that stack? Why do I have them ordered that way? As soon as you walk away from the work, seconds later, all of a sudden, you've got at least a minute of, let's retrace my steps so that I can get back to where I was just seconds ago.
Yeah. So I like I said, I think it is probably, it's simple, but if it was easy, everyone would do it and we wouldn't have to talk about it. So I love that. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for these awesome tips. And I'm sure there's more we could learn from you. Maybe we'll have to do this again, get into some more stuff. But given our time, I want to keep things, you know, fresh and short. But you know what time it is? It's time for our speed round questions. So if you're new to the podcast, these are short, fast questions with short, fast answers determined by the roll of a die. So let's go ahead and jump into speed round.
Let's do it.
All right, I'm going to bring up our dice tower. I've got a 12-sided die. We've got 12 questions. We're going to roll the die, and let's see what we get here. So question number one is a 6. I always have to clarify for people the dot at the bottom by the loop. It means a 6. So for you, Brandon, what's a piece of advice that you've received that has had lasting impact on you? It doesn't have to be about video. It could be just any general advice that you have.
Yeah. So I'm going to give one that was given to me recently that I really, really enjoyed, and it has nothing to do with video. Always be either taking a vacation or planning a vacation.
I love it, because you're always then got something to look forward to, or you're doing something.
Always. You always have, this is the next thing that I'm doing in mind. And if you just need like a few minutes to just like take yourself away, you can just think about like, what's that next trip?
Yeah. So I'm somebody, and we don't have like an unlimited PTO system. So we've get like acquire a certain date, and I always know where my next thing is. So I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's bring up the dice tower again. Here we go. Roll number 2, number 5. All right. So if you could wave a magic wand, right, and instantly acquire a new skill, what would it be and why?
Oh boy. If I could wave a magic wand and instantly acquire a new skill, it would be, this is a tough one. I guess I'm going to go with bouldering. I live just outside of Boulder, Colorado, and I've started rock climbing with my 8-year-old son, and we have a lot of fun. I've never been able to boulder at all, and it would be a lot of fun if I could.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a blast. I don't know that I could do it either. So that would be a great skill.
It's hard.
I bet. All right, we got one more question here. So here we go. Dice tower's up and a 7. You're right. Like, I'm rolling pretty consistency.
So right, you got in the middle.
5, 6, 7 there. So, okay, what's a, maybe you just answered this question. What's a hobby or interest you've always wanted to pursue but haven't had a chance to yet? So bouldering.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Hobby I've always been interested in and haven't had the time to pursue. I've pursued a lot of the hobbies that I'm interested in. I would say like a micro hobby that's always interested me and I've never looked into at all is lockpicking. Like I love like the lockpicking lawyer on YouTube. Yeah, I don't know. I've always thought that was like a really interesting, just like little micro hobby.
Yeah. You know, the first place I've ever seen lockpicking is we used to hold a lot of brown bags and they had a lot of like crafty things at TechSmith. And lockpicking was one that our IT department of all people put on. So that was, it's super fascinating to see how locks work and what you can do. And so I love that. Well, Brandon, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with me. So, you know, if we have people that want to connect with you, learn more from you, you've obviously got a lot of great things to share. Where can they connect with you?
Yeah, the easiest place is LinkedIn. There's not a lot of Brandon Burtners out there. So if you look me up, Brandon Burtner at Scaled Agile in on LinkedIn, you can find me right there.
Perfect. All right. As we wrap up the show, we always like to ask people their final takes. So Brandon, what is your final take?
Yeah, my final take is, again, make sure that you're always accelerating the flow of value to customers. You need to always be thinking, what can I be doing to get content out the door faster and to make sure that I have a consistent and constant stream of content going between myself and my customer, because you don't want people sitting around waiting. And you've got to keep people engaged, because if your audience isn't finding engagement on your channels, they're going to go find it somewhere else.
Perfect. Well, Brandon, thanks again for joining me in the Visual Lounge.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Matt. It was really a lot of fun.
You bet. All right, everybody, go check out Brandon's stuff. Go listen to what he's got to say, wherever he's sharing it there on LinkedIn. And, you know, what I love about what he shared, though, is it is very practical. We can all do it. It takes some discipline to be, you know, to think about these workflows and process and, you know, just allowing yourself to say no, to block some things off. I get that can be hard because there's a lot of pressures to perform and to do things. But if you do that, guess what? It's going to make your work better. It's going to make it easier. It's going to make it faster. That means it's going to get to your customer faster, which does mean that value is going to come around. And so everyone will be pleased with that, including you, I bet. So, well, you know, if you like the show, please like and subscribe on YouTube, on wherever you find your podcast. We can found. If you got comments, questions, things you want us to know, please reach out to us at thevisuallounge@techsmith.com. And also, don't forget, take some time to level up every single day. Thanks, everybody.